please consider calling into the show today. We have a number of hot topics, and your voice needs to be heard. Thoughts, Love, and Reflections is your opportunity to make sure your opinion is heard over the noise of the media. James T. Deshaies is committed to bringing the voice of the people to the world stage. He'll select topics, but your voice will be the focus. So take time to spend with him and inform the world of your views. We can no longer sit back and let others tell us what to think. The cost of being a silent majority is too great, and too many lives are being destroyed. The leaders around the world need to be put on notice that their jobs and careers depend on how well they listen. Call in on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 657-383-0309, or Thursdays, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 347-855-8867, or Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 657-383-0309. Why don't you add Thoughts, Love, and Reflections to your weekly schedule? If you have story ideas or topics of discussion, contact James Deshaies at 407-394-9819 or email djames82@aol.com.
USI never had it so good. 101.1 radio, the best R&B and hip hop music. The Quiet Storm every Friday and Saturday. Talk radio with the best host in the business. Sports talk radio every weekend night with Princess Cooper. Never had it so good radio now on 101.1, and it's 24/7, the world's best radio station.
This is your host, James T. Deshaies, of Thoughts, Love, and Reflections, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. All right, guys, I just truly want to apologize for the technical difficulties we had on yesterday. You know that I'm always looking forward to being here with you, and it just brings a lot of unhappiness in my heart when things come up and we're not able to clear them up in time enough to get the opportunity to talk with you. But today we are fully want to be engaged and ready and prepared to talk with you about all the things that are going on around in our nation. There are a lot of things we'd like to discuss, but there's some main topics I want to hit on today. I am so elated. I was had the opportunity to listen to what was going on related to our new National Museum of African American History, and how great everyone is enjoying it and loving the opportunity to visit something that is uniquely special to the African-American experience. And just like President Barack Obama said, this new facility is for all Americans, not just African-Americans, but it's something that should engage all of us, enlighten all of us about how special and unique our history is, and how proud we should be, and also how committed we should be to moving forward. That's what this museum is about, and museums all across the country that are committed and dedicated to African Americans should be something that we all view so that we can get that special feeling of what it is to be encouraged and committed to our connection to being African Americans, and others recognizing the great commitment we've made to our society and to making America a better place. It is up to us to move forward and do what it takes. But there are some other things that are going on in our country that we need to address, things that we need to make sure we don't let get swept under the rug. We're in a special situation where there are a lot of things going on related to our existence and to our rights and to our young people and to our men and to our women that we have to address. We have to make sure that people understand there's value to American, African-American lives, and they can't just be taken for granted. And so we need to talk about and discuss what it is that we need to do in order to make sure that these people fully understand that they're going to be held accountable when they take our lives inappropriately, when they take our lives without reason, rhyme or reason. They have to be held accountable, and it's time for us to make sure that that happens. We have to understand that we have to let other people know that we're just not going to be satisfied with any story that they give related to one of our people being killed and murdered. And I want to congratulate those people in Charlotte, North Carolina, who have now began to protest and peacefully. I understand and recognize that there are going to be times when people's frustrations are so high, they're going to react in an inappropriate manner. And I understand that, and I'm not going to degrade them and suggest that somehow or another they're not human because they lash out that way. When you take the life of an innocent person on absolutely nothing, you have to expect there are going to be people who are not going to be able to control their anger, and they're going to just lash out at people who are not looking to treat them appropriately. And this seems to be the problem. One of the things I need to talk about or get an understanding of is that Mr. Scott had been doing the same thing for a long period of time, waiting for his kids to get off the bus so he could greet them in his truck. And so they were prepared to do that. The only thing that was not normal was this group of police officers who people have been labeling the jump out team or jump out boys that were there to serve a warrant on someone else. And so what I have yet to hear, and I would hope that some of you would help me, you know, we need to talk about and find out what is it that made them, the police officers, pay attention to him? What was it that made them want to engage him and find out who he was? Even before he was asked to get out of the truck, why was he asked to get out of the truck? What is wrong with an African-American man sitting in his truck waiting for his children, and he has to be engaged by police officers? So what was the reason or the pretense for the engagement in the first place? I haven't heard that yet. And so I'm trying to understand, long before we get to him not listening to instructions, why were you giving him instructions in the first place? That's one of the things I want to get to know. The other thing is I'm concerned about, I've been hearing there are some people who suggest that this man was not even, that the shooter was not even the black officer. There are some people who have been interviewed around, who were there at the scene, who suggested that there was a white gentleman who shot the police officer, shot Mr. Scott. So why is the black officer being brought into the situation? There seems to be a lot of things going on and a lot of questions that are not being answered. And I want to ask you all if you have similar issues with some of the things that are being said, but some of the information not being brought out. I'm at the point now where I think we ought to be asking for the resignation of the black police chief because he doesn't seem to be on top of things. He doesn't seem to be able or prepared to deal with the fact that his jump out boys may have done something wrong. And that's the issue for me, that he was so prepared and ready to run with the information that they gave him, and a day or two later started backtracking about what it was that he saw on the videotape and what he could confirm. And I just don't believe, or I don't want to believe that may be the case, that we have so many citizens who are willing and prepared to go against what is being said by the chief of police. That concerns me, that we have people out there saying that there was no gun. We have people out there who are saying that Mr. Scott was not shot by an African American. People who are saying the African American came up after the shots were fired. And so who are these people who are so ready and prepared to put the shooting on the African American police officer who's only been a policeman for 2 years? There seem to be a lot of unanswered questions, and the chief of police does not seem ready or prepared to answer any of these questions. In fact, he seems to be prepared and ready to back off of what he was so firmly committed to when he first came out on the first day. It seems to me that we need to really be forcing the issue and pushing him to come clean with what it is that he knows or doesn't know, what it is he's willing to put his job on the line for. He seems to be ill-prepared to deal with the issue that this jump-out team may be a bunch of rogue cops. They may be people who, for no reason, find it necessary to get involved in the lives of people who haven't done anything. And so why is it we haven't been told what was the first reason or premise for them asking Mr. Scott to get out of his truck in the first place? Why were they so hell-bent on shooting this man? And then where did this gun come from that they're suggesting was Mr. Scott's gun, when his wife clearly stated that he didn't have a weapon? There seems to be so much information that needs to be cleared up, and I don't know if he's prepared to clear it up because he seems to be so committed to not being transparent. It bothers me when someone says they're going to be transparent, then they come back and say, well, I didn't say clearly transparent, and you know, what's transparent to one person is different to another. That's not the kind of people we hire. We didn't hire him to hold information back from the citizenry. I think it's clearly stated by some individuals that police officers have gotten to the point that they don't know who is in charge of their job. Ultimately, I know here in Orlando, the mayor hires the police chief, but the citizens hire the mayor. So the hierarchy is such that they can be replaced, or they answer to the citizens. And they need to recognize that all citizens are not criminals, and they cannot go around treating all of us as criminals. And it's getting to the point where we need them to recognize that they need to treat us appropriately and not keep treating us as though we're second-class citizens. And until everyone, all races, start demanding better treatment for the police officers, we're going to always find ourselves with the short end of the stick. And it's time for us to make a change to make sure that these people fully understand that we're not going to continue to be treated as though that our lives are not valued or important. And again, there are several questions I want answered, and I hope that you all have information, or we'll continue to ask the questions. Why was Mr. Scott firstly approached in the first place? Here's a man that Monday through Friday, he goes and waits for his kids in his truck and reads the book while he's waiting for his kids. Then, after that, why was it so important for him to get out of his truck? It wasn't a moving violation. Why was he engaged with them to the point that they needed him to get out of his truck? Then why was it that there are people saying there was no gun, that was a book that fell out of his lap, but yet they are committed to saying there was a weapon with his fingerprints on it, his blood on it? You know, was this a weapon they brought with them or have with them all the time so they can drop it when they go on their events to go if something goes bad? These are the kinds of things we need to know, and I don't hear anybody answering these questions. We're just putting the earnest on Mr. Scott about what Mr. Scott's reaction were to these police officers, but we need to know what their reactions were to him. I think we have a few people on the line, so I'm going to try to go to some of our callers and get some of these information answered. 20 minutes into the hour, we're going to go to break, but right now we have about 5 more minutes. Can you give me your name and where you're calling from? Can you give me your name? 6490. 6490. Can you give me your name and where you're calling from?
This is Lorraine. I'm calling from Orlando.
Hi, Lorraine. You see, are you a first-time caller?
Yes.
All right, welcome. What are your thoughts about what's going on in Charlotte, North Carolina?
Well, when I seen the news when I did get home, I was just really in shock because the wife was yelling, stating, "You better not shoot him because he hasn't done anything." And it was just, I had just walked through the door. I didn't even know what's going on. But as you stated, he was just sitting in his car waiting on his kids, and that was my point. Why would you be approaching him? He's just sitting in his truck.
And I haven't heard anybody say anything about why that was. And I have to admit to you, that was the most horrific thing I have ever seen, to have a wife out there begging for the life of her husband. And I just didn't know. I felt so much pain for that young lady. I felt so much pain for her.
I couldn't even imagine to stand there and watch and have to scream for that. It's just, I don't know.
It's like
open season on black men.
Yeah, it seemed like they were completely ignoring her, and they had no humanity in them whatsoever to back off and de-escalate that situation. It's like they were bent and determined that they were going to kill this man, and they wasn't going to hear or care about anybody who was watching or videotaping them.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's like it wasn't anyone there saying anything to him. They just wanted him shot, dead. And it's just like they don't care. And my thing of it is, why did you even approach him?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to get. I still haven't heard anybody say why they engaged him in the first place. He wasn't the person they were after. So why did you have a need to approach him and ask him any questions or ask him to get out of his vehicle?
Exactly. And even so, he didn't have a weapon.
And there are a lot of people saying that he didn't even get shot by the black cop. And I'm trying to figure out, how do these different people come up with these different answers related to who shot him when they're not together? They're not in the same family, so they're not talking about it. So why did they come up with that a white officer shot him versus the black officer?
Well, as you stated, it was standing right there, so
yeah, it's,
I would
it's
go with the people who were standing there.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Let me go to some of these other callers, and thank you for being a first-time caller, and please stay on the line and so that I might come back and ask you some additional questions.
Okay.
Hi, Regina, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Regina, I know you always on top of things. So tell me, have you heard why they stopped him in the first place, or why they engaged him in conversation, or why were they asking him to get out of the truck when he wasn't even the person they were originally after? Do you have any idea about that?
Yes, I do.
Okay, I knew you would have something.
Supposedly, when the cars came upon him, there were plainclothes police officers in the vehicle, and they observed him rolling a blunt in his car, and they observed him with a gun. And supposedly, that is when they left, plainclothes officers left to put on their police gear, their vest that said police officers, and they came back to the car to get him for, I guess, rolling the blunt and having a gun. Now, that is what the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department statement is, but they negated, they did not say that Charlotte is an open carry state. So it is not illegal to have a gun in the state of, in the city of Charlotte. So that was not the crime. And for them, for a man to end up dead for rolling a blunt, it's ludicrous. So this is how they're saying they even engaged him, because he had the gun and the blunt.
So we're at this point because they observed a man rolling a marijuana cigarette and having a weapon in his truck when they were there to go after somebody else. And so, in essence, you're telling me they didn't have nothing else to do and they didn't want to waste their day. So they decided they would put their whole effort and focus on a person with a marijuana cigarette and who happened to have a gun.
Yes.
And we're not so sure of the gun. So they're, you know, we're still speculating on whether he had a gun or not. And they did all this on a basis of a marijuana cigarette. And therefore, you know, we have now a dead man. Now, let me ask you this. Had you heard that some people are saying that it was not the black officer who did the shooting?
I have heard that. I've heard that from two different eyewitnesses, that indeed it was not the black officer. Now, I also saw something where they saw allegedly said that the gun was planted. Now, let me be very honest with you. In looking at the video from the police department, I'm not going to say that he did not have a gun. I'm not going to say that. But what I will say is that he never raised his arms to present a threat with the gun, if indeed it was a gun in his hand. He never raised his arms, and that was in the police video. So I'm not
have
going
you
to
seen
say
the
that.
I have been busy most of the day, but have they produced the police video?
Oh, yes. That's why I was late coming on. I wanted to see it first.
So what did you see? I'm sorry. Make sure I fully understand. What is it that you saw in the police video?
They have two police videos. One is from a dash cam, and one is from a police body camera. The police body camera is not from the body cam of the alleged shooter. It's from another officer. So it shows them, the dash cam shows them pulling up, and the other body cam shows what happened as the scene unfolded. And you could hear the wife in the background saying, don't shoot him, don't shoot him, he doesn't have a gun. And none of them really shows a gun, none of them shows a gun in his hand definitively where you can see the gun and where you can see that it is presenting a threat to any of the officers. The film does not show that. Now, it shows how his hands are curled up, possibly, and guns are so small these days. That's why I'm saying I cannot say that he did not have a gun in his hand. And I cannot say that his hands were not curled up from the traumatic injury that he obtained from his accident last year. You know, you don't know why his hands were curled up. I don't know, and maybe they don't know. But I did see the officer in the red shirt kick something out of the way. I saw that part also. And you can see
when you see the
video.
Did he raise his hands at any time?
No.
Did he back away from them? What was his movement?
He was backing,
related to the truck.
He was backing away, and he was backing away. It doesn't even look like he wasn't running. He was just backing up, and when they shot him, his hands had not been raised.
So you never see the identity of the black officer or who fired the police shot?
No, you could not see that on the film that they released. You do not see which officer fired the shot. You see the two officers who were on the other side of a pickup truck or some run from around the pickup truck, but you do not see who from the other vantage point fired the shots.
Well, let me ask you this. Is there a reason why the other officers didn't have their body cameras on? Is there any reason why the officer who fired the shot didn't have his body camera on?
That's a good question. Why don't you have, if you're engaged in this time and you have a body cam, why don't you have it on? Why is it not activated? And they also said that when you activate your body cam, the first 20 seconds or so, you don't get any sound. So they did not have sound from the body cam. They only had the visual. And when the sound did come up, you could hear him moaning as he was dying, laying on the pavement. And you heard the officers say, go get their bag out the car or something, and to hold on to his wound. I guess they were trying to keep him from bleeding out.
Now, did they tell us or say how the cameras on the policemen's bodies are activated? Is something that they manually have to do, or is it something that's automatically done?
From what I just heard, they have to manually activate them. And that's when it said that once it is activated, you don't hear the sound for like 20 seconds. I don't know if there are different types of cameras across the United States, you know, that are manually activated, automatically activated somehow or what. I don't know. But, you know, I'm no expert.
It just seems to be pretty good for the officers that they have that 20-second delay before you know what they're saying, giving them an opportunity to make sure they can say things that they might not want to be heard. We're going to go on our first break, and then we'll come back. I want to thank you for bringing that to our attention, but we're going to go on our first break. Please remain out there as we continue our discussion on about what's going on in Charlotte, North Carolina. T. Deshay of Thoughts, Love, and Reflections, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. One of the things I want to say that I am very impressed with the fact that the people from Charlotte are now having these peaceful rallies, and they have been keeping it up for almost four or five days now. And I just want to get your attitudes or your thoughts related about how do you think they're doing, and what, you know, do you believe that these peaceful marches will have the effect that everybody really wants? It seems that we've already heard that the videotape from the police department came out because of the pressure that people were receiving from the citizens, which is a great thing. And so we're going to go to our phone lines again, and I want to just get your opinion about the behavior in terms of the marches, the peaceful marches that have come after the original violent march that happened after the event took place. All right, 4337. 4337, give me your name and where you're calling from.
Tony, I'm calling from Orlando.
Hi, Tony. Give me your idea about what do you feel about how these crowds are now getting being a lot more peaceful, and the fact that they seem so committed to the cause.
I think peaceful protests can go so far. We've been peacefully protesting for years, but the people being so disciplined now and committed to it, it is making a difference. But when it comes to these cameras, it's public funds that are being used to buy these cameras, and the public should make the decision on how they're going to be used. Cops don't get the right to decide that, well, we're not going to show you the video now. And in this instance, when it's favorable to the cops, we should. And to the people that have the time and the desire to make a change, I support them wholeheartedly. Those out there who are doing it for the wrong reasons or to benefit them, I don't support it. I don't think that somebody who has done wrong should be the person to arbitrate what we should do, who we should support, who should be our leaders, how we should protest. And regardless of what we think, it needs to be our decision and not someone, you know, supposedly in authority. You know, that's like having the fox, you know, watch the hen house. That's just not going. So as far as those people protesting the way that they are, there will always be a character assassination of someone who stands up against the authority or the powers that be. And we have to be willing to look beyond that. And when we stop just letting the media dictate the images we see and what we communicate to each other and how we should feel, you know, we'll get better. And I think that is finally starting to happen. And it's not just with black people, you know, it's with all races seeing, hey, you know what, this is not right.
And I'm not, I have to say to you, it does not surprise me that people get involved in damaging property doing these types of events. I think those people who are responsible for the reaction of the community need to be aware that their behavior is what created the environment for the damage done to property. So instead of looking at those who are damaging property and saying, why are you behaving like that, we should be pointing our fingers at the police officers and wondering why they are engaged in the kind of activity that enrages the general public. We have a right to decide how we want to be policed. I want criminals
exactly
arrested, but I just don't want you going around haphazardly interacting with the general public for reasons that may be questionable. You went out to serve a warrant. You didn't find the person that you were going to serve the warrant on. So why was it so important for you to engage a man who was doing something that was not a big deal? You know, we're in the midst of almost having marijuana legalized. So why are we just bent on going arresting people for something that in some states are legal? I question whether you're doing it just to, you know, to interact with people to find out what else is going wrong, or are you just, you know, just using it to be a pest? And I have a problem with that.
You know, I would say if you've never had chocolate ice cream, if I told you you weren't going to get it, it wouldn't matter to you. But these police have been exposed to stuff in training. They've been conditioned to see people of color in a certain way. And it's like once the toothpaste is out of the tube, you can't put it back in there. Now, the problem is back in the 60s and the 70s, they weren't all these smartphones. So the fact that they're being exposed, it's not the problem that they've done something wrong. It's the fact that you're exposing them that's their issue and their concern. Because if they were concerned with doing the right thing, we wouldn't have to have all these riots. They would hold those people accountable. And when we talk about cops, cops have an ability that criminals don't. They have a gun. They can take your life. They have authority that we don't have. And with that, if you took it to the level where you said, Mr. James, if you were a cop and you had to have insurance, and if you shot somebody, they took your insurance away and you lost your job, how many black people you think would get killed then?
You're right. It's amazing that you said that, because I was wondering how could we create an environment to help to have them more accountable? Because normally when police officers make mistakes, it's the taxpayers who have to pay from them making those mistakes. So maybe should look at making them have insurance just like we have doctors have insurance. And I wonder if that would be legal.
Well, I would say if you made them say, hey, you know what, to carry this gun, you have to have some responsibility, meaning you pay for a license. And if you get caught in something that's untoward or something that's wrong, we take your license. And when we take your license, until we can prove that you're right, you don't get paid. Now, police say we do this to protect you. No, you don't. You're doing it for your paycheck. Because if you wasn't getting paid, you wouldn't be doing it.
Well, now they do have a police officer certification that we can do that with. But I'm wondering if we should require them to have insurance so that when they make mistakes, that there is money, a pool of money to pay for the mistakes that they make. Or are they going to say, well, we work for the police department, so they should require insurance for us? We got a few more people on the line, but I like some of the things that you said because it makes me think about some additional things. But stay on the line. We're going to go to Audrey. How you doing out there, Audrey?
Oh, Superior, thank you very much for asking. And I agree with the gentleman from Orlando as well. I think he said it well, your original question and his answer. I think that's great. One thing that I would like to propose is that when they're having target practice, I really would like for them to change that image from being black. I think that they can still get their practice in. I think they can still choose what they're trying to do if indeed they just have an outline of the body and do that target there, because subconsciously I just feel that by practicing or shooting black, that subconsciously is getting into their mind, and that's another opportunity for people to not necessarily make the best choices.
And you're right. You know, we have to do something to help them better see that the people they're interacting with are not all criminals, and they shouldn't even be approached in that fashion. That somehow they need to kind of dial back the way they approach people so that they don't immediately go to their guns as a means to solve the problem. It seems that we have too many of them using their guns as a first reaction versus using something that is a little less dangerous as a result of them approaching the general population. Let me ask Regina a question, and we're going to we're reaching about we got about 5 more minutes before we reach the 45 minute point, and we want to go to break. Regina, what do you think of citizens or those of us who work for the government having some type of insurance related to how we interact with the general public. You know, I was thinking about how could we hold police officers more accountable and have them be in a position where they could pay fines related to the way they behave on the job. But as government employees, can we be required to carry some kind of behavioral insurance?
Well, I know that as a part of my employment, I'm a part of an organization that would help pay my fees if something were to occur and I had to go into a courtroom. As I've stated before, instead of these people, these police officers being put on leave with pay, if something like this happens, I believe they should be put on leave without pay. They need to feel some sort of hurt, some sort of damage to themselves until the situation is settled. I think that they're just sitting at home and saying, oh, well, you know, my boys will handle this. And they're getting paid. And I just don't think it is right. And as Andre said, I agree with much of the things that the young man, that gentleman said, and it's just making me extremely, extremely upset to continue to look at how this man, even if he did have a gun in his hand, one, it is not illegal in North Carolina to have a gun. Two, it was for rolling marijuana. So what? You don't lose your life for that. And three, he was not being aggressive towards these police officers. They went looking for trouble. And this is how it ended up.
Yeah, I believe wholeheartedly they were already ready and prepared for a fight. And because they did not find the person who was on that warrant, they're just, that testosterone was still high, and they wanted somebody to fight with. And so they found this man to fight with. But the other thing it is, we still got a lot of questions that I hope get answered, because when you have two or three different observers of a situation and they're all telling you that the black officer wasn't the one who fired the deadly shot, then we need to be wondering, why are these people covering up? Why are we seeing so many discrepancies about what was done or saw? Again, there are a lot of people saying that this man did not raise a weapon at these officers before he got shot four times. And I'm just concerned, too, about why is he being shot so many times? Even if you had to fire your weapon, why can't you fire it, see if there's any return fire, and fire it again? You're the ones who have on the body armor. You're the ones who are trained. Why is it that you always fire these multiple shots in a situation where you're not even sure if you should be shooting in the first place?
Well, James, I have a question. Maybe some one of your audience people know. Is it something where, as you said, when they fire the shot, when one shot is fired, do the other officers automatically just start shooting their guns? Because as you said, why were so many shots fired?
Well, in this case, one person fired, and he fired all the shots. No one else fired any shots.
We have to understand, cops use stuff like, you know, like being in war. You're in the blur of this, of the moment. My adrenaline was pumping. Well, my point is, if I'm a civilian and I shoot a cop, I can't use that as no excuse. So the reality is, until we change it and say, no, we don't want that to happen, it's going to keep happening. Because even now in North Carolina, they're saying that the governor and the mayors and all them, they've already voted that even though we're the taxpayers and we make the decision, they're saying, no, you can't see the video until we get ready to show it. I mean, how do you pass
a law
like that?
They sure did, yes.
So what's the point in getting the cameras if now you're going to say, so now how are you going to do that? I think it starts next week. So how are you going to put that in place when the whole point was to have transparency? And when we think that they're going to buy old military stuff, they ain't buying that for white folks. They buying that stuff for us. And those are our tax dollars. And then they come into our neighborhood with these tanks and all this stuff like this, and we're not prepared for it. And if they make a mistake, oh, well. You know, so.
All right, guys, we take another quick break. I know the conversation could go right through the break, but I have to take these breaks. So let me take another short break, and we'll come back.
Thank you.
Help your children and don't let them fall by the side of the road. And teach them to love one another, that heaven might find a place in their hearts. Jesus is love. He won't let you down, and I know we've got to walk on, walk on through temptation, 'cause He's love, and His wisdom will be our helping hand. I know the truth, and His word will be our salvation. Lift up our hearts to be thankful and glad that Jesus is
love. All right, this is your host, James T. Deshay. A Thoughts, Love, and Reflection brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. You know, you all brought up another thing that I think we need to talk about, and we have about 20 more minutes left. And one of the things I want to discuss with you is what rights we have as citizens. I want to talk about that right now. You know, all of us have these smartphones, and all of us have the ability to videotape things, and we can almost live stream everything, and so we have a powerful tool. But I have to question: are we going to allow our government to tell us what we can do with our own personal devices? Because I've heard of some policemen suggesting that they have the right to arrest people who are videotaping information, or you know, using their cameras, because they're interfering with an investigation. So how do we make sure these officers know that we're not going to allow them to tell us what we can do with a personal device that we've actually bought, and also let them know that they're not going to be able to have the freedom to deny us the ability to view or force them to make available? Because it's my understanding that we can almost force anybody by going to court to divulge information that we believe that is for the public good. So our elected officials in no way should be able to deny what is in the public interest to keep stuff from us. So even though that law will be in effect in 5 days, is that something that can be overturned by going to court and suggesting that the general public pays for that equipment to be used for the health and safety of the general public, and then to say that you're not going to divulge that information to us upon request, It's ludicrous. Andre, what are your thoughts about that? I mean, do you think they're supposed to have control over devices that we purchased that gives us the ability to videotape and take pictures and the live stream information and suggest that we can actually be arrested for using our own cell phones?
Well, I think we have to have an understanding of what the law is and what the limitations are. And it's my understanding as it is now, unless another law is in effect, that if indeed a government agency requests your phone or whatever, and they receive all your information, whether it's your computer and that type of stuff like that, then, of course, we turn it over. So the point of it is when we're recording, and if indeed they want to limit it, and they do have the opportunity to stand behind the fact of they're doing it, they're still investigating, and until they see that it's a proper time, at least defined by then, to release it. That's just the way it's always have been. Now, I'm not saying that it's right, but I think we would have to, again, to your point, look and see what the laws are and what timeline is required. I think the original question was, do they have the right to release it when they want to versus us, the citizens who are paying the taxes, we as taxpayers? I do believe as a government agency, they have the right to determine when to release. May not be favorable if we disagree with it, and if I'm not mistaken, then you have to just take the process, the steps, and the process of changing the rules and the laws to make it differently.
Well, I think that's part of what I think the reason why Charlotte so quickly gave in was because of the public display that those people were protesting. Had it not been for them protesting, I don't think they would have had the pressure on them to show those videotapes. And the awful videotape that the woman, the female, the wife showed, it required some kind of statement or something. So they couldn't just leave that out there to boil in everybody, in the people's feelings. That here you are, this woman went through hell. I don't think I've ever been as remorseful for anybody in that position. I was almost there with her, and she literally didn't have anything she could do or say to impact how they were dealing with her husband. And she was pleading for his life and wanting him to be alive, and nothing she said had an impact on those police officers. They were bent on doing what it was.
And the thing of it is, I think this is like the second murder that we've seen right before our eyes. I remember this one lady, and unfortunately I don't remember the details of it, but she was like sitting in the same car with him, and she was recording it and all, whether it was his wife or girlfriend or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, the thing of it is, the more we see these murders, and we have to realize these are not TV shows, these are not movies, these are real life. And every time we're becoming more and more immune to it, we may be upset, but the more we see it, the less we'll, respond and react to it. I agree with you. I mean, my heart just went out, but I remember the first one that I saw. I refused to look at it because I said, that is nothing. It was nothing but murder. Now, if I want to see a murder show, I'll go to a movie or I'll watch a movie. That's a difference because I know those are actors. But here it is, real life, and that's what I wanted to mention before you asked the question about our legal rights and our laws and as it relates to our personal items and stuff. We have to be mindful that young children are watching, whether they're watching us or whether they're watching the news. And now you're talking about slavery and over time, the struggles that we've overcome. A lot of this is going to impact our next generation. And it's very important to us to remember from whence we've come and what it is that we need to do to protect our future, and the future being our little ones, our young ones. like I said, here we are as adults watching murder, true murder on television. That's a mental impact to us. So our wellness is challenged there. The other part of it is, again, you know, when the police officers invade your home or whatever the case may be, they have to have a document from the judge to say, a warrant to say that they can go in and that type of thing. What I want us to be mindful of is that whatever organization that we belong to, we have different people in authority. And as we were talking about, if we as citizens kill the police, we don't have the same protection that criminal police officers have as far as, you know, whether they feel for their life or, again, they have the vest, the bulletproof vest and all. But the thing of it is that that's their profession. When we're in the church, all of us are human. We're all sinners, yes. But we look to our pastors to have a different responsibility and accountability because of the call in which he's called. Now, are they human? Yes. But my point of it is, when you're in a certain position, I'm expecting you to behave in a different way. I say the same thing about police officers. You're trained. Therefore, you should be held accountable of handling situations differently than me as a common person. I may go off on you, but I'm not trained to, like I say, reduce the situation and then handle it in levels. I mean, I try to do my best, but I'm just saying overall, the common person haven't gone through the necessary training to, you know, de-escalate the situation.
I think you're saying, yes. Trying to say that they should de-escalate situations.
De-escalate it and then determine what level of force is required. But me as an average citizen, I'm not held to that same, at least I should be held to that same accountability.
I'd like to make a comment or two.
Okay, go ahead.
When we think in terms of the police, if you rob somebody outside of 7-Eleven and there's a video, they don't hesitate to go in and get that video. So regardless of what law that's there, it's not one standard for them and another for us. And the second thing is, as a professional athlete, I had to study my opponents every week. I didn't tell my opponent what I was doing or how I was going to play against him. So when we have video, we don't need to run out right away and say, I got a video. No, you go home and back it up on another system. Don't give it to the police until they come out with what their findings are. Because when you give them that video, now they can line their statements up with the video. And until we learn who we're dealing with, these same things are going to keep happening. So we'll say,
let me ask you this. Do you think they have the right to confiscate your phone when you're there at the moment and they see you videotaping it? Do you think they have the right to confiscate your phone or tell you you better stop videoing because you're interfering with an investigation? How can that be possible?
Well, I'm not an attorney, so I can't answer that. But the guy who got shot in South Carolina, he was trying to run away. There was somebody standing there just videotaping, and the cop looked over and saw him. That obviously was not the rule, but I won't say that if it's not, that they won't be trying to change it like they're changing this other rule. They want everything to benefit them, but we have to keep the heat on them. So, again, you can't in the one sense say, well, we have a public or a private citizen who has a video camera on their store or their business, and you go in and confiscate that tape. Well, if we know that they can do that to us, what we need to do is go back it up someplace else. And then when they come out with their crooked story, you say, no, this is the actual videotape that I had. This is not interfering with an investigation. What this is doing is holding you accountable. See, a lot of times people don't know what you think until you open your mouth. And we just now, Johnny coming to the game, we figure, oh, I got you. I'm going to show you. No. When you go and show him, now he knows how to act accordingly. If you are a quarterback, you don't tell the defense, hey, I'm going to run this running play right here by the center right now. No. You go in the huddle, you talk to your 11 guys, you decide the play you're going to run on, and then you run it. You don't tell the defense what you're doing. So we have to learn how to operate within the sphere that we live in. And until we learn to do that, we're going to keep having conversations like this. Now, it's good that we're having them, but we got to learn from them so all that we're doing is not just having the same old conversation. How do we get better? So
James,
we got to hold ourselves accountable to a certain extent too.
Okay. Dang. Regina, let me ask you this question. You're involved in the government a lot, Regina. Can they stop us from videotaping at the time that police officers are doing things? Can we be pushed back to a place that it's not visible, or can they make us hand our phones over to them? Do you know?
Well, I will tell you that I did have that exact experience where, and that's here in South Carolina, where I was videotaping the police doing something, and one of the policemen came over to me and asked me a question about what was happening, and I told him, I don't know, that's your investigation. And he said, well, you're standing over here videotaping everything, give me the phone. Let me see what you have. And I told him to give me, quote, to me the law, which says I have to give him my personal phone. If he can quote that law to me and I can verify it, I will give it to you. He couldn't quote that law to me, and I kept my phone and ended up being able to show the interaction to our police chief, who then insisted that that police officer apologize to me for his action. So, no, I did not give up my phone, and I would not. Now, if you're the way of them, you know, doing whatever their job is, you can't interfere directly with their job, no. And if they ask you to move back, then just move to a vantage point where you can still videotape.
Exactly.
And that's what I think we have to learn how to do, but we're going to have to be willing to say what you said, because some people just give it up just because they say they're an authority. And, again, that's one of the things I question, too, is if we are not in a compliance, do we deserve to be handcuffed and thrown to the ground just for not complying to every statement they ask? Now, if they ask you to move back, and I keep moving back, and I keep moving back, and I keep videotaping, and they say to me, stop videotaping, and I should be able to say, no, I don't think there's a law that says that you have the right to make me not videotape. But one of the things we have to be in consideration is the Bland girl was smoking in her car, and he told her to put out the cigarette, and she said, no, it's lawful for me. I can smoke in my car. And then that's when he escalated and said, get out of the car. But what she was doing was not illegal, so she shouldn't have been asked to get out of her car. And as a result, he was able to take her into custody, and then we had to deal with them telling us that she committed suicide. Well, she shouldn't have been in the custody of the police in the first place. It was a ticket. So in some instances, they make these statements about demanding that we do things that are unlawful, and then the result of us saying no gives them, or what they perceive is, permission to put us under arrest and resisting arrest without violence.
In looking at the video, and I hope all of you get to see it before tomorrow's program. It is just, my question is, from the video that I saw that the wife had, and you know, I guess I'm just the gadfly in this conversation. She made the statement, Lamont, don't do it. Lamont, don't do it. So now the question also is, what was the it that she did not want him to do? Now we have
I think they were telling him to get out of the car. So I don't know if she was telling him, don't do it, don't get out the car. Because they were trying to say he had a gun, but this woman said that this man had a traumatic brain injury. And she's screaming
right.
that to him, but they ain't trying to hear that.
Right. He had a motorcycle accident last October, I believe, and broke both of his hips, something with his pelvis, and something with his head, in that he stuttered now. And so he didn't,
wow.
you know, think clearly. So that's why I was saying in the beginning, his hand was curled up. I don't know if that was a result of the accident,
or if he was
curled around a weapon. I don't know, and so if I can't tell, I don't know if the police could tell or what either. But the don't do it. So, but she said to him in the beginning when you see her, I thought she was saying don't let them. No, I heard her say don't let them break the window. Don't let them break the window.
Yeah.
So I can't remember right now. Did she
to get out of the truck? She was asking him at one point to get out of the truck to keep them from
breaking the window.
Right.
Yes. So she was asking him to get out of the truck. So what was the don't do it? And they did find a holster, an ankle holster on him.
Mm-hmm.
For his ankle. So they did show that on the when the police released their video, you'll see where they released those pictures of the gun and the ankle holster also.
Well,
so he did have a gun
there. I want to say to all of you that I want to just share with you, one of the things I feel like is I know that it is legal to purchase a gun. I know you can get a concealed permit to carry a weapon. I just don't think as an African-American that I feel like I'm safe if I do what the law says I can do. Now, if they're going to use that as a reason for shooting me, how do I win either way? If I go get a weapon, get a permit, go take the lessons to use the weapon, and then you use me having the weapon as a reason to shoot me, how is that in my best interest? And it seems like white America can do this without that being the end result for them, but yet as an African American, I have to bring in consideration, is my life threatened by the people who are supposed to be protecting me because they're more apt to shoot me if I have a weapon?
It's almost like a setup, and what Ray Dotch, D-O-T-C-H, he's the spokesperson for the family. He's in the media somehow. He was adamant in telling the media to stop trying to humanize this man by looking at his past. He has a lengthy record, and what they're saying, what his family is saying, is that was the past. I think that his past was.
They didn't know that at the time that they interacted with him.
Exactly. It made no sense at that time.
Yes.
They did not know that.
Yeah, so they always try to do a character. They always do a character assassination. But know this, the dude Dylan Roof, they shot up the church in South Carolina. I say this, they took the man to Burger King when they knew he had a gun. He went into them black people's safe place, the church, and shot it up like it was nothing. They took him to Burger King. So the guy who blew up the terrorist that did the thing in Oklahoma, they didn't kill him right away. So how they treat us versus how they treat them, we have to teach our children about that. And if we don't, these things are going to keep happening. And you're right, Mr. James. You know, you have the concealed carry. You go through all the training. But if they know you got a gun, they react totally different than you. When the dude, Clive and Bundy, out there in Arizona or Mexico, had them cows, them people was on the off-ramps and on the interstate with military-style guns pointed at the FBI, and not one person was killed. Now, if them people were black out there with guns, we'd have been counting the body.
Well,
so, they gave them many days. They were there for many days before they were demanded to leave. So, no, within 2 or 3 days, you better have yourself out of that building had you been black.
Now,
well,
that was a step.
The first
one was about the cows. That one with they took over the building was up in, like, Wyoming. They went up there to support them.
Well, look at the man up in New York who just did all the shooting, and they found him curled up with the gun in the doorway.
Yeah.
He wasn't killed. I mean, he did the bombings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, the bombing. But still, he shot a cop, too.
But he wasn't killed.
No, he wasn't. So how he shoot a cop, he's still alive. So, you know, when it comes to us, we just have to know that there's a different standard. and we have to bond together. I mean, my grandfather is telling me, he said, you come back from the military in World War II with your uniform on and they will lynch you. And my point is, you come back here thinking you can participate in the GI Bill, and you couldn't. You came back here thinking you was going to be able to participate in Social Security and all the stuff like that, FHA, buying your house, and you couldn't. So we have to know there's a long history. And where we feel we have the ability to speak out now, white people are always proactive. When slavery ended, they came up with the vagrancy laws, then Jim Crow, all the other stuff that was going on, and then the prison industrial system. So when one thing ends, they always got something else that replaces it so that it keeps us as a bottom feeder. And until we learn to create our own, to work within our own system, to do business with each other, because when they went to Africa, they came in with missionaries first, then their merchants selling us stuff, and then their military come in. Guess what they're doing here in America? We go to church. We learn what they teach us. They come in our neighborhoods and sell stuff, and when we get out of line, they send the military in or the police in on us. And until we understand that in our churches, we got to have men as people that are in there. Not saying that we threatening anybody and telling you to come up in there, but you need to know you ain't about to walk up in there on Farrakhan and shoot this place up without some bullets coming back at you. So we have been trained to obey. It's like you can take an elephant and put a rope around him for the first 3 or 4 months, and afterwards you can put some thread on him, and he will not go beyond that which you trained him to do. Now, you got people getting upset about a gorilla getting shot, but when black people get shot, are they getting upset about you not standing for the national anthem or honoring the flag, but you ain't getting upset when people getting killed? So when we have that type of discrepancy, we have to understand who and what we're dealing with.
All right, we're going to take another short break. We've been given an opportunity to go an extra 30 minutes, and it's easy to go an extra 30 minutes on this particular topic. But we're going to take another break, and we're going to come back to finish out the show.
Because folk are his personality, his character. He's gaining momentum, and in the beginning, he's going to be able to win over folk until they realize that he does not have substance to what he's speaking of. They want to see the bantering back and forth between he and Hillary. But once the voters realize that it takes more than just his vague answers to run the United States, then they will start paying attention to what's really happening in this race. But in the beginning, his personality is going to win over.
All right. Okay, I want you to be careful because I hear some background noise. So let's be careful about the noise that's in the background because we won't know. Okay, we're going to go to Audrey. Audrey, Monday is big for us. Who do you think is going to win and why?
I agree with Regina exactly for the same reason. Donald Trump, his personality, he has momentum, and as it relates to the topics, I don't know if Lester Holt is strong enough to hold them down. And because of the fact that no matter what he say or whatever he does, any question, he's going to put a spin to it. It's not about logic. It's not about truthfulness. It's not about facts. It's just that he's going to sway it. I just do believe it.
All right. 4337, tell me, what are your thoughts about this upcoming debate, and who do you think is going to win?
I think Hillary is going to put him in his place, but I think the media is going to say that Donald Trump won. Because when you look at it from an experience standpoint, policy, there's no comparison. When they talk about they want to change election, hey, I can agree with all that. But the reality is he's not going to get the black vote. He's not going to get women. He's not going to get the Spanish vote. He's not going to get the Jews. He's not going to get homosexuals. So he's left with white folks and white men. And there's not enough of them to really carry him. And when we think, they'll say, okay, we registered more voters than we ever have. But guess what? In the state of Oregon, in the primaries, they showed that the Democrats went from having 600,000 down to 500,000. And the Republicans went from 200,000 up to 300,000. Well, there's still a $200,000 gap, gap in it. And just half the Democrats show up, it won't even be close. But we fall into the rut of, oh, here comes the media. See, I'm a journalism major, more specifically public relations. And one thing, the media, they don't tell you what to think. They tell you what to think about. Who tells you that the news is going to come on at 5 or 6? Or who says that football game is going to come on Sunday? And now football is more of a religion than church is. So when we control our own thought process, nobody can come and tell us what it is and what it's not. But I do agree with the two young ladies. They're going to say that Trump won it, but it's not going to even be close. Now, Hillary can get in there and stink it up because, you know, she's trying to be too litigious. She's trying to give, you know, these scientific lawyer answers. And you got a lot of dumb people out there, and they just want to hear simple, dumb stuff. But Trump has not said anything worthwhile yet. And because of that,
well,
it's almost like the Bible talked about having an itching ear. You want to hear something different, so you run and jump on that.
Well, I'm going to agree with you. I believe Hillary is going to win, but I believe Hillary is going to eat him up. I don't think it's going to be close. One of the things I think is important for people to understand, you know, you stupid can make you laugh, but intelligence will make you cry. And so
mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, that woman is truly intelligent, and that she is going to clean his clock. He ain't going to like it that a woman can stand up to him. I'm looking for him to explode. I am looking for him to have one of those explosive moments that she truly proves to everybody how unable he is to handle the pressure.
Well, I think that would be for a regular candidate. But you have to remember his experience in television. And again, you're thinking logical. You're thinking about experience. You're thinking about knowledge. You think about intellect. That's how you're thinking. But you have to understand the audience in which he's targeting. And you're right. And I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name.
Tony.
You're absolutely correct. He has the demographic based around white males predominantly and uneducated. And the media, you're exactly right, is their spin on it. And, it's, you know, if you notice on the news, and it may be just me, you know, anytime they announce, it's always his name first. Whenever you see the little streamers that's riding around, you know, on the news or what's going on, where he's, it's always his name first. And, you know, it makes me sick, but what it is that's his momentum. And like I say, the analogy with the football game, it is, you know, you can be down and your time can be running out. But if your team starts to have the momentum, I don't care how talented you are in the opponent.
Yep.
If you have the momentum, you're going to roll. So until Hillary Clinton supporters start speaking and speaking up boldly, I mean, now that Donald Trump just received endorsement from, you know, a Republican that I thought that really had the guts to stand up to him, and now
Ted Cruz,
that he's on board with him now. And let me just say that what Donald Trump would do, all the unrest that we're having here now, he will play on that, and the fact that Congress will veto the president the first time ever, if indeed they do. Do you know how many people had someone that was impacted by 9/11? And now if they say that if the Congress go forth and say, yes, go ahead and have these families to be able to sue, which is not the right thing to do, because like they say, people will come back and sue America like nobody. But, you know, believe you me, Donald Trump is going to use that emotion of people. And some of the ones that may not necessarily have voted for him would end up voting. This is a critical time. So don't think she's going to just go up there and dance. He is slick as a fox. So,
all right. Before we close it out. So I'm going to get these people in who called in because we want to make sure we get everybody's opinion. 4484, give us your opinion about who you think will be the winner on Monday night.
I have to go with Trump. I actually think that we should look at the puppet masters and see how they're actually playing this thing out. You know, it doesn't matter what we say. It basically matters what Congress says and what Congress believes. I know we all have some voices and opinions, but we have to look. They're playing this thing out. They had him on The Simpsons being president. You know what I mean? They had Donald Trump. This is prophecy. This has been for years. Donald Trump running against Hillary. If you just go look at The Simpsons, they'll show you who's going to win. If you look at the media, his show used to play on Fox 5. Not only Fox 5, but NBC, ABC, and all those channels. So you have to look and see that, you know, he has the media control in his pocket. Not only that, he's been selected to be president, you know, according to television, you know. So I think that we have to look at the puppet masters and see that these puppet masters who pull the strings are pulling him to be president. I mean, he's speaking for all white people, you know what I mean? And Hillary doesn't have that as much as we would like to. You know what I mean? Hillary, I'm sorry to say, she's a woman, but she doesn't have the voice of Donald Trump.
All right. I got one other caller. I want to get them in and see what their thoughts are. 7685, give us your name and where you're calling from.
My name is Melvin Webb, and I'm calling from McCoy, Florida. How you doing, cuz?
All right. So now who do you think is going to win on Monday, Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton?
I think Hillary's going to win. I don't even believe Donald Trump really wants to win. That's why he's saying everything he's saying. He got up here just by saying things, close the borders and everything, And that's why he always say all these way off things. He didn't really plan to get this far. But I truly believe Hillary will win.
Well, I'm in agreement with you. I just can't see Donald Trump being able to overcome that intelligence. I do believe that he's not going to get 10%. I don't think Donald Trump is going to end up getting anywhere near 10% of the black vote. He's going to get less than 20% of the Hispanic vote. And I think that he's going to lose a lot of the women vote. And I think those people who are intellectuals, are intelligent, are going to recognize during these debates that this man just ain't got it. So that's what I'm betting on. So I'm going to go on record on saying that. I think that Hillary is going to win going away over the next three debates. I think she's going to destroy him. In the first debate, I think she's going to rattle him something tremendous. And so I want all of us to be watching, because you know that on, you know, we'll be back on my show again tomorrow at 6 p.m., and then we'll be before the debate at 6 p.m. on Monday, and then Tuesday we got a lot to talk about. So I want all of you to stay in the habit of calling in and continuing to support Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, and know that this is a show that your voice can be heard loud and clear. We don't allow people not to be respected, and all your voices and all your thoughts and all your opinions will be respected. And we want you to know that this is the place that we want you to be, so that you can make sure that you know that you can make sure that your voice is heard, and other people won't be speaking for you, but you'll be speaking for yourself. This is Thoughts, Love, and Reflections, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. We'll see you tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Purple rain.
You better close it.